Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. We're all familiar with the space race and the arms race, but there's another international race that we're in that many of us have never even heard of, the race for quantum supremacy. Quantum physicists say we are in the midst of a revolution that could transform computing, energy, medicine, and more. But some also worry that we aren't doing enough to train the quantum engineers of the future. Evelyn Hu is Tarcoin Professor of Applied Physics and Electrical Engineering at Harvard University and co-director of Harvard's new Quantum Initiative. Evelyn, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Heather.
Now, Evelyn, I have a map on my wall right above my desk that's like a map of all of physics. It was created by physicist and science communicator Dominic Wallerman, and it puts quantum physics right next to the edge of the chasm of ignorance, which I feel like I live in the chasm of ignorance. My understanding of quantum physics is basically it's the description of how atomic and subatomic particles work. Give us a little bit more on that. What is quantum physics, and why is it so different from the rest of physics?
I'm not sure that it's different from the rest of physics. The description that it describes the basic interactions of atomic scale particles is true, but in doing so, really quantum physics underlies the behavior of everything we work with in science and technology today. So we may not think about it explicitly, but everything, the way that our semiconductor chips with billions of transistors can do computation and communication so rapidly, the way that we use magnetic resonance imaging, the way that we send information over fiber optics, so we send information in the means of light, even the way that we do GPS. Basically, at the heart of it, what makes it work and where the technologies perhaps break are all determined by quantum physics and the basic interactions of matter.
If we're putting it to use in all those ways, we must clearly have a pretty good understanding of it. And yet, quantum has this reputation for being completely ununderstandable, right? Richard Feynman famously said, if you think you understand quantum, you don't understand quantum. Why does it have that reputation?
I think it has the reputation perhaps because it challenges our day-to-day, what we would like to call practical understanding of the world. And our practical understanding of the world is based on macroscopic behavior, what we can see, what we can touch. And there is a charm about quantum physics that is almost magical. I mean, the term quantum leaps have already pervaded our vocabulary, and we use it. We use it to mean something magical, something that challenges the imagination, even if many people who use it don't quite understand what it means.
Well, what does quantum leap actually mean?
Well, one essence of quantum mechanics, and one of the profound implications is in how we handle information. So typically in this digital age, we talk about units or bits of information as, in very simple terms, a zero or a one. Is it on or off? And we make use of those zeros and ones and multiply zeros and ones in arrays to be able to transmit or to represent a huge amount of information. Quantum mechanical units of information, or bits, we could also say we have a zero or ground state, and we have a one, which is an excited state. But in quantum mechanics, we can superimpose that zero and one to have anything in between. And that, in a sense, although scientists who work with these notions accept it, understand it, manipulate it, but it is difficult to describe what does it mean. But essentially, it means that your units of information, even with a single what we call quantum mechanical bit, as opposed to the regular digital bits we work with, and a quantum mechanical bit could be the spin of an electron, whether the spin is up or down, or it could be a single photon. That quantum mechanical bit by itself can be placed in a state to hold a greater multiplicity of information. And then if you put 1, 2, 5, 10 quantum bits in series and you engineer a particular state, those 10 quantum mechanical bits hold vastly more information than 10 ordinary bits, our ordinary understanding of bits would hold.
So it sounds like it could really make computing much more efficient, essentially, if we were to put this into play. I mean, our computers are already, as you mentioned, superconductor chips, already based on an understanding of quantum physics. So when we talk about something like quantum computing, are we just talking about a much more efficient version of computing? How different would quantum computing really be?
And that's a great question. And I have to say, despite the fact that there are companies who are taking that bold step to engineer and make the first quantum computers, the answer is, quite frankly, we don't know. And the reason why don't we know? The implications are huge. Yes, on the surface of it, if we can represent information and store information much more efficiently than we can do now, then there's the promise that we could carry out computation much more rapidly, much more efficiently, and be able to attack problems of greater complexity in a sort of parallel way that we couldn't before. But the promise of quantum information science and just this basic representation of information in a fundamentally, I say fundamentally different way, but it's always been there. What hasn't been there is our ability now to be able to control those quantum mechanical bits, our beginning, our baby steps in being able to engineer those superimposed quantum mechanical states. And so the implications are profound, not only for computing, but for communications, for metrology, for measuring pervasively with greater precision the world around us because of the precision of these and the sensitivity of these quantum mechanical bits.
So, Evelyn, as you're talking about this global push and both academia and industry involved in different ways, it sounds very collaborative and congenial. Where does the race for supremacy come in? Where's the competition? And what else do you think the U.S. needs to be doing to kind of stay at the forefront of this quantum revolution?
You know, part of that race and competition is part of the natural race that happens in science, where there is both collaboration, sharing, as there has to be, but there is competition as well. The sharing of information and techniques, most scientists realize, makes everything better, makes the understanding of difficult problems easier, because I realize that part of this relates to the Quantum Matters competition that will be held at the Museum of Science. A competition can often elicit different talents, different opportunities, and elicit the best performance out of the competitors. And where is that race coming from? And what could the U.S. and indeed every country, every unit do better? The race is coming because everybody is eager to contribute the most innovative, important scientific breakthroughs, but more than the scientific breakthrough, because the consequences are so broad. And I say the consequences are so broad because if we're talking about understanding and changing our understanding of the nature of information itself and what we can do with engineering, storing, and compressing information, those have consequences that are extremely broad.
On that note, you've already mentioned that it's hard to even imagine what the ramifications of quantum might be, whether it's in computing or medicine or energy or any of these other fields that could be impacted. But I wonder if you personally have some device, some function that in your wildest dreams you think quantum might be able to bring into reality.
Let me answer your question, but also give an example about my hesitancy. I will give you a wild dream of something my colleague Marco Lonchar calls the quantum cloud, and he's not the only person who speaks about the quantum cloud. But I want to go back to something I think we're all familiar with, the humble transistor. I think most of us are familiar with it. It is what empowers this remarkable recording, the way that we receive information today seamlessly from every area. It started out life as something, if you've ever seen a picture of the first transistor, it was basically pieces of plastic and wire, and it was made of germanium. It certainly, in 1948, did not look like the progenitor of a huge technology that dominates our lives today. I think broadly, it has consequences, even in less prosperous societies. It was basically a switch. Could turn on and off. It was the digital zero and one, or it was the predictor of digital zeros and ones. But it was a single device. People realized that it could be important, but they didn't know what it would be used for. Some of the first thoughts were it could be used as a way to power hearing aids. Who could have imagined, but that device and the proof of concept of making a switch in a compact form, and it was not so compact in 1948, that could be in something we call the solid state. That means it was not a vacuum tube. We could carry it around. There was a potential that it would be more robust. Then it engendered all kinds of other ideas like the idea of the integrated circuit. And that led to ideas of let's make it smaller and how small can we go. And I just want to say that because you may see the potential of something that could be really transformative. You know, we all look for that. But I think however your vision leads you, what society will ask of it, what inventors will build on top of it, is something you can't anticipate. And neither should you, because if it's truly transformative, no one person should be able to predict what the influence of that invention can be. So having said that, you asked me to dream. I dream of something which my colleagues will call a quantum cloud. We talk about the cloud as that, you know, it's a sort of that pervasive area that we don't see where information comes back and forth in a way that doesn't depend on individual devices, your computer, your phone, but where information is transmitted, communications are routed, and that enables us to do rapid image processing, to do rapid calculations, to do rapid communications. We talk about the Internet of Things today. What if it was an Internet of quantum sensors that were seamlessly tied in to the ability to do computation extremely rapidly? So we had that information about the environment around us to a degree of precision which we don't have now. And we were able to not only do the computation of multiple inputs about the environment in every context and then send it out rapidly to the place where that information is needed. And I have to say that I think we can do that, but this vision I think is a very poor one because it's based on what we do now.
Well, I was hoping for teleportation or being able to be in two places at once or something like that. But I guess we'll have to settle for the quantum cloud for now. Evelyn Hu is the Tar Coyne Professor of Applied Physics and Electrical Engineering at Harvard University and co-director of Harvard's new Quantum Initiative. Evelyn, thanks so much.
Thank you, Heather.
If you'd like to learn more about quantum physics and the excitement of the quantum revolution, Boston's Museum of Science is hosting a Quantum Leap event on April 5th and 6th. They'll be featuring the winners of this year's Quantum Matters Science Communication Competition with short presentations on research at the cutting edge of the field. You can find a link to more information on our Facebook page, facebook.com/livinglabradio. You can also find us on Twitter. And we hope you'll join us back here next week when we hear from a researcher using satellite images to uncover cases of modern-day slavery. Until then, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.